Americans like their history prepackaged, processed, and ready for mass consumption by the majority. But whenever you have a majority, well, you have minorities, and their histories aren't always told, or told accurately, because they fly in the face of what the majority would like to be true. And their histories are therefore presented, abridged, or omitted from the popular narrative altogether, leading to real-world issues and consequences in the present day and age. And therefore, American history must remain unabridged. And that's the type of history we're going to focus on this podcast. My name's Mark Iverson. I'm a historian out of Boise, Idaho. And this is American History Unabridged, the podcast. Thanks for listening. Thank you to the Trendy Dads out of San Francisco, California, for that wonderful cover of the B-52's Private Idaho. Before we get started tonight, I'd like to thank our sponsors, Funky Soul Coffee. That's soul with an S-O-L. It's the brainchild of Michelle Russell and Gavin Butler. These two had a dream, and that was to turn a 1976 Airstream camper into a coffee shop, a 70s-themed coffee shop. And they've succeeded. Michelle Russell has years and years of experience in the coffee industry, and she's come up with some truly delicious 70s-themed concoctions. I've had the privilege of tasting a few of them. You can reach them at 208-447-9044. You can email them at hello@funkysoul.com. And you can find them on Instagram or at www.funkysoulcoffee.com. Give them a try.
Hey, thanks for listening. I thought this week of July 4th, 2024, we would do something a little different. It's tied to American history, though it's not American history, but it is indicative of the great contradictions that come when we're establishing republics or democratic republics, representative democracies, whatever you want to say. But basically, I'm going to hop the pond, the Atlantic, to talk about the French Republic. And we're going to talk about the genocide committed by the French Republic against the Vendée. The Vendée were from the Vendée region of France, and they were peasantry by and large. And they were Catholic, very Catholic. And they were supporters, thus, of the monarchy. They believed that Louis XVI and his predecessors had been appointed by God. And so, you know, 1789 happens, you have the overthrow of absolute monarchy, and then in 1793, you have the execution at Madame Guillotine of Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette and a great many others, and what became the Terror. Well, you had the Committee of Public Safety start to dominate politics and execute the king. Right? Robespierre, famously the head of the Committee of Public Safety, and some other greats, but they would all be executed later, right? Because they committed the Terror, right? And so it was a very paranoid environment where lots of people were getting executed. One minute you were on the sunny side of the slope, and the next minute, well, you were cast into the shadows and you were anathema to the movement, and therefore you were executed, right? But they would commit genocide against the Vendée because it was another source of this paranoia, right? The revolution was at threat. The ideals of the Enlightenment of Rousseau, Montesquieu, Voltaire, right? Well, now we're putting these ideals into the real world, not just in one of paper and theory. Idealism. We're placing it into the real world, and we're trying to create this in the French Republic. And so, well, when you had threats around you that were monarchies, these empires around you, you know, Prussia, you know, the Austrians, you had the English, and they're forming these coalitions to defeat the French Revolution and the French Revolutionary Armies in the 1790s. Well, to have an enemy in the Vendee region that are fighting a guerrilla war and trying to link up with some of these monarchies that are surrounding you, well, this is no good. And so they commit genocide against the Vendee, who are very Catholic, right? And in the name of the French Revolution. And so it was justified. These are backward people, they would say. And therefore, they exterminated not just the soldiers, not just the men, but the women and the children. They tried to. And so just like in the United States, where you have these great contradictions, right, where you have George Washington and you listen back to my Own a Judge episode, whereas George Washington basically, you know, enslaved Own a Judge, and Own a Judge was the personal valet of Martha Washington, and she actually was Martha's direct servant. Well, when she ran away, Own a did, George pursued her, and this is representative of how you can have this great fight for liberty and also trying to put the, make practical and real the ideals of the Enlightenment. Well, how can you have that when you're also enslaving hundreds of thousands and later millions of people? It doesn't make sense. And the English would point this out. Well, in a different guise, while the peasantry of France had been trying to take some rights from a more constitutional monarchy, and, they'd been having it better over the 18th century, they didn't want to be re-entrenched underneath a new regime that was godless. I guess they saw their plight as getting better, and they were also, believe God had appointed Louis the 16th. So in 1793, when he was beheaded, yeah, this was no bueno for them. And so, a war starts, right? And therefore, they must be wiped out in the minds of the French Revolutionary Committee of Public Safety. And so to start, let's go back you might be surprised that I'm starting here, but November 18th of 1095, when Pope Urban II called on the Catholic clergy, the nobility, and the warriors of France to fight in the name of Christendom against the Islamic Seljuk Turks in the Holy Land. And this was what essentially began a multi-generational campaign towards the religious homogenization of Europe. And this emerged basically in the various domains, principalities, and kingdoms throughout Europe, starting in France with Urban. But across the centuries, Europe's rulers and various other domains attempted and succeeded in consolidating power, forming nation states such as Spain and the United Kingdom, and then binding those nations together under this religious ideology that would stitch dominant groups in these nations and unify their power, basically. But the way they would do this is they incited these dormant and explosive animosities towards non-Christians, Muslims, Jews, etc. And they would label them as heretical. And this, they would say that they were a constant, clear, and present danger to the nation state. And therefore, they scapegoated them. Nothing binds a nation together at times like fear, ignorance, and hatred. So on the heels of the French Revolution, fast forward to the 18th century, the Christian nation states of Europe witnessed the new Republic of France's secular government attempt to unify and preserve the nation through the extermination of Catholics. So it just reversed, right? Other groups can do it. It doesn't just have to be religion-based. But the most present example of this was against the Vendee in the 1790s. And the Vendeans were, as we said, a conservative society of peasants centered in the Vendee region of France, which was a maritime region along the Atlantic coast. And these conservative Catholics had supported the French monarch. And by and large, they did not like the French Republic that, as we said, had just executed their king, Louis the 16th. And so the revolutionaries feared the rebellious Vendee and the threat they'd posed to, as they saw, the fragile Republic, new and fragile. And they were, as they would use this term, a menace. And they were made more alarming by the geopolitical realities that were confronting France at that time. They were surrounded, as we said, by a coalition of Christian nation states. The revolutionaries tried to justify the eradication of the Vendi in one of the first genocides of the Enlightenment by describing the genocide as a necessary step to the liberté of the citizens of the revolutionary France. And ultimately, they said, humankind as a whole. And so, on January 21st, 1794, the French state launched its 100,000 strong Army of the West, as it was called, in a 12-column pronged assault on the Vendée. In reality, the Vendean or Vendean army did pose a threat to the Republic. It really did. Because the Vendée achieved a number of real victories, real threatening victories, they knew the land, they knew the area, and they were fighting a guerrilla campaign. And they were defeated decisively, though, the Vendée were, at the Second Battle of Cholet in September or October 17th of 1793. And so the Vendée saw their uprising, as they saw it, against an atheist republic as totally justified. And it took on the fervency of a crusade. So it was very violent, because the French Republicans also saw themselves as completely justified in overthrowing the monarchy and centuries of domination by a religious monarchy and elite nobility and clergy. And so they saw that they were justified. And this led to a lot of violence. As the new regime saw it, the risk of the Vendée linking up with the British fleet in the Channel, the English Channel, might strike a direct and fatal blow at the Republic's metropolitan center. So after the defeat at Cholet, the Vendean military capabilities were drastically curtailed, making the genocidal actions of France's new government military against the population of the Vendée really, really criminal. They were defeated. As an estimated 50,000 to 100,000 Vendeans retreated through the region of the Loire after the disaster at Cholet, the French Revolutionary Army, under a General François Joseph Westerman and his leadership, massacred thousands of innocent men, women, and children. In a report he presented to the Republic Convention, Westerman describes how his forces trampled Vendean children under their horses' feet, murdered their women to prevent them from giving birth to quote-unquote brigands, and he shot those surrendering because he thought they would just form into another military force. Maybe he was right, I don't know, but they were fairly roundly defeated at this point, the Vendée. And so he added to the committee that revolutionaries do not recognize mercy. And so the Republican regime, under the command of the Committee of Public Safety, followed Westerman's example and advice. It accepted the strategy of a new general, General Louis-Marie Thoreau, to exterminate the entirety of the Vendée to the last. The Army of the French Revolution would divide into those 12 columns in 1794, and they headed west. And they weren't there to conduct a war. They were there to commit genocide. They put village after village to the torch before liquidating the population. Offers of pardon were extended in a mass trick. Basically, they would say, oh, yes, we'll save you. We'll save your children. But then they would atrociously be bayoneted, mass bayonettings, mass shootings, but usually bayonettings to save the ammo. And then they would basically gather women and children and some men, but they would put them in large prison barges that they would sink, and they would drown masses of people. And how horrible is that? Hundreds at a time, sometimes thousands. They also, and this is something that I think not a lot of people know, it wasn't the Germans that came up with the idea of gas chambers. Early gas chambers, it was the French revolutionaries. They came up with an idea to, as they put it, fumigate or gas the Vendée to death in mines, that they would cover up the front with hides or skins, boards, whatever, and then they would pump in toxic gases. They did this a little bit, but it never became a huge systematic or system-wide way to exterminate the Varndi, though they are the ones who came up with this. And there were already other reasons to commit genocide, too, not just because of the physical threat. The French Republic was in a fragile state, which made it more deadly. But they needed assets. They needed coin. They needed animals, anything that could be sold. So they needed capital to continue building their nation and fighting for their nation. And so the Committee of Public Safety thought that it might secure these, this capital through clearing, quote unquote, of the Varndi lands through a policy of expulsion and extermination. We call that ethnic cleansing in today's day and age through what happened in Bosnia. We come up with that term. Historian Mark Levine explains that the Committee of Public Safety, their motives for the systematic attack, the assault on the region, was also intended as an asset-stripping enterprise realized for the benefit of French nation-state building and the revolutionary cause, end quote. In order to acquire the desperately needed assets that the Varndi possessed, the CPS, Committee of Public Safety, of the revolutionary military, they hastened mass murder. As many of the Varndi were killed as feasibly and quickly as possible. In addition to stealing their lands and assets, the Republican regime also contended with domestic threats from other groups other than the Varndi who supported the monarchy. And so this was a building block or an idea for an outline of how they might deal with them. The genocidal tactics of the Army of the Revolution under the order of the CPS spurred other royalist Catholics to take up arms against the Republic with, quote, guerrilla-style rebellions emerging in neighboring Brittany, Normandy, and Anjou, end quote. And so, yeah, mass violence rarely stops, mass movements. It adds fuel to the flames in most cases. To take on such violent action, it just justifies a reverse military campaign in many senses, a revolution. And so the formation of these other military alliances and guerrilla movements in Brittany, Normandy, and Anjou basically led to a backlash that slowed the French Revolutionary military's attempts to rob the Varndi and commit genocide against them because they had to send those forces elsewhere. Mark Levine describes how, and quote, the region was inflamed to such an extent that it forced Thoreau's successor, General Horch, to negotiate in early 1795, not only to return the return of the Varndi still surviving inhabitants, but the region's reintegration, into the Republic on terms which largely conceded to the insurrectionists' original grievances. So we didn't really have to fight at all. And so you didn't have to commit all these genocides. So in committing this genocide, but not completely destroying the Varndi, the revolution's regime retreated from its genocidal policies. That they had perpetrated, quote, the repeated legacy of genocidal or post-genocidal regimes, which have been forced to concede partial failure or defeat. The new regime of revolutionary France was constantly pressed with the possibility of defeat. They were always paranoid that was going to happen at the hands of several enormous military coalitions that threatened them from other internal uprisings. So whenever you had a military coalition on the outskirts or the exterior of France, well, you had more paranoia and threat from basically internal uprisings. And they were also presented with, the prospect of economic collapse. And so in short, quote, the circumstances of 1793-94 are both entirely extraordinary, yet exactly the sort in which genocides can happen and do occur. the regimes or the states of paranoia only worsened in the regime as the threat posed by the Vendee continued after their defeat. Like so many paranoid leaders of nation states, you know, you can include Joseph Stalin, Pol Pot, Saddam Hussein, and et cetera. The leadership of the Committee of Public Safety, most notably, as we said, Robespierre, they justified the mass murder of the Vendee that took no part in the rebellion, really, as well as they killed the elderly, innocent women, and children. An important question arises from this genocide, however, that was perpetrated against the Vendee. Why was this chiefly, you know, peasant population not included among the ranks of the newly liberated citizens of the Republic of France? You know, they were peasants, and they were anti-feudal. There were anti-feudal decrees of the Republican government that would have benefited the Vendee greatly, especially with revolutionary policies intended to redistribute considerable amounts of land to the people. Yeah, but the conservative and staunchly Catholic beliefs of the Vendee led them to interpret the French Revolution as a murderous coup against the divinely appointed King of France and its people. You know, conversely, as the Catholics of the Crusades and the Holy Land did to their enemies, the secular government of France, they did so the same thing to the religiously conservative Vendee. They defined them as inferior and labeled them as enemies of the revolution, only now not of Christendom. Regarding Vendeans as backward plague poisoning the new republic from within, the Committee of Public Safety and the French Revolutionary Army, as well as a sizable portion of the population, believed it was justified to root them out and exterminate them, the virus, as they called them, before it destroyed their revolution, the people's revolution. And in this clash between what you call religiosity and secularism, roles became reversed. In the annals of the history of Western Christianity and the construction of European nation states, through homogenizing European peoples around virtuous Catholic identities in opposition to all heretical others, the assault on the Catholic Vendee by secular regime of revolutionary France was a first. But you have these old ideas of the heretical others that would fuel the Vendee in their zealotry against the revolutionary forces, right? And so their religious views basically trumped their secular beliefs or arguments, such as they would get more land and support from the government. They didn't care about this. They cared more about what their Catholic scripture and what their ideology said, or what they interpreted it to say, which is that the monarch of France was divinely appointed by God. Even more than this, the goals of the French Revolution were directed toward the greater good, standing, you know, in defiance of thousands of years of imperial and monarchical repression. And so in the large, we see them as right and justified. But in justifying their actions for the greater good, they committed the most evil of all, the act of genocide against a specific group of people. And so the confusing reality is stemming from the eradication of the Vendee, or the Vendee, was that those fighting for the cause of liberty is simultaneously sought to eradicate those who supported the historical instigators of discrimination, oppression, and mass violence. And this is the Catholic Church and Christian monarchies. In more basic terms, the victims of genocide supported the perpetrators of violent oppression, while the perpetrators of said genocide fought for the ideals proclaiming equality and liberty for humankind. The revolutionaries of the Committee of Public Safety viewed the people of the Vendee as standing in the path of progress and liberation of humanity from despotism. And consequently, the extermination of the Vendee was seen as a necessary price to pay. Many officials and citizens of revolutionary France were willing to pay this price, and in fact, were happy to do so, and did so with zealotry at the end of bayonets, through mass drownings, through mass shootings and so on and so on, and even large-scale attempts to gas many of them. And so this is a shameful period in the French Revolution. And there is blood at the root of any revolution. And then that revolution becomes the oppressors, and it takes another revolution to overthrow those oppressors. There's never anything straight and narrow and all good. And so from the American Revolution, an exceptional moment in American and world history, there's a lot of unexceptionalism, right? And same thing for France. So don't take any shit from France, Americans, right? Don't let them judge you without saying, hey, by the way, the Vendée and the Terror and other things, right? We're all capable of it. Genocide can come from any quadrant, any side of things, right? It can be an atheist movement against the religious. It can be a fanatical religious movement against the secular. You know, it can be genocides within a genocide. In the Holocaust, we didn't, the Germans didn't just mass murder Jewish people of Europe. They murdered political dissidents. They committed a genocide against the special needs community of Europe. They committed genocide against gay people. They committed genocide against the Roma. And so these things, they're genocides within genocides. And then what I've seen in my years of study of genocide, my whole collegiate career, you know, we're talking 10 plus years of study. And I can tell you that victims of genocide, often the survivors, form groups that therefore later in the name of preservation of our people, they commit genocide against other groups. And I'll leave it to you to apply those examples in your mind that you know of, right? Oftentimes political ideals, you know, communism, Pol Pot in Cambodia in the 70s, right, in the Khmer Rouge. Well, they committed genocide against their own people, people that weren't on the side of the Khmer Rouge and Pol Pot, you know? So if you're not in political line with their political philosophy, and that's what happened with the French Revolution, you know? And then oftentimes, you know, even later on, these major moments of history where the nation is changing. In America, we're talking about the geography, spreading west, spreading the American exceptionalism and our God-given right to the West. And that's out there. And so we take it through conquest of peoples that have already claimed those lands and been on those lands for centuries, thousands of years and more. And so, but that justification otherizes those people and always had since the colonists settled in America, right? And then that same idea, a city on a hill. We have the right to spread Christianity and Western civilization to the quote-unquote heathen peoples in the West. And if they accept it and accept and bow down to cultural genocide and the appropriation of their lands, well, then now we turn them into a lesser class of American citizens around reservations. And so there's this religious otherizing that goes on. And if they don't take on our way of civilization, our way of life as Euro-Americans, and you know, then we have justification to kill them off. And so it happens everywhere. It happens in the West. It happens in America. So you get a moment in America where you have the oppressed of Europe that are running away from turmoil, from these very problems we talked about with the Vendée, right? And then in Britain, right, against the Irish, the potato famine, they had the potatoes. They could have saved the Irish in mass, but they didn't because they possessed them for their own personal gain. And oftentimes the potatoes would rot as people were starving. Well, those people are desperate, and they come across the Atlantic Ocean, and then they are still desperate, living in tenements in New York City and other places in the East. And so they move west, and in their desperation for a better life, they basically push off and commit ethnic cleansing and genocide against those that had already been there, and so on and so on, right? And this is human cycles of violence in the name of greater goods and greater things in the mind of the people committing said systematic violence. And so where are we on this spectrum now? I'm getting afraid. my genocide radar is on full alert, right? And it's when you see mass otherizing. I've been called a pedophile far too many times for supporting the gay rights, LGBTQ plus people. And I've seen them called pedophiles. And there's a difference between not agreeing with something and then demonizing somebody that is not a pedophile, but you think it's true. So therefore, what are you going to do? You're going to make them into the deviant other that therefore you can later, justify discrimination and violence and then or maybe even genocide. And I do see the precursors to that happening in America. So be wary of how you treat others. Say, is this the right way to label somebody, even if you disagree with them, right? Can you not just disagree? You don't have to call them inhuman because we're at a tipping point in America we're in dangerous times and we need to find our humanity because we might think we're saving America, but we're in fact destroying it. So be wary. And really, kindness is king. Yeah, kindness is king. So practice some. I think I'm going to try harder and harder all the time. Thanks for listening. Listen, next week, the next one I'm working on is a study of tuberculosis among the Nez Perce or the Nini Poop people. So do tune in and let's see what it was like to be a member of the Nimi Poo with tuberculosis at these schools, these wards, and these towns that still exist, historical sites in Idaho and elsewhere. So thanks for listening and do tune in next week. Thanks.